Hey there, everybody. Welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I am Beth, and today I'm joined by Chris. We are both teachers here at LSAT Demon, which you can find at LSATdemon.com. Today, we wanted to get together and talk to you guys about some of our boomer advice is what we called it just for fun of like, we're not quite boomers, but there's some things that I do think we would like boomer align a little bit. So Chris, do you want to tell everybody what we are thinking and kick us off?
Yeah. Thanks, Beth. And, you know, I've never felt more like an old person or a boomer than teaching college age students now. So this is really going to be talking to a non-traditional audience from a non-traditional audience. But we think there's going to be some really, really helpful nuggets in here, even if you don't fall into that category, because we're going to be talking about things about debt, finance, ways to maximize your experience in your study and application. And so we think there's a lot of value here. But because we did this as non-traditional students, that's really who we're talking to with a lot of our advice today. But we will start off just kind of talking to people who are KJD. So for anyone unfamiliar with that acronym, that is kindergarten to Juris Doctorate. So our population that starts in school and never stops until they're done all the way. That was not me. I've had some significant breaks in between, but a lot of students who study for the LSAT do fall into that category. And we think there are some special considerations that students in that category might want to keep in mind as they look at their law school journey. Beth, what are some of those?
I think the number one comes up all the time, and it's actually a regret I have, and probably Chris too. You have such a special opportunity right now to make your GPA the absolute best it can be. Undergrad was super fun for me, and school was fairly easy, honestly. And so because of that, I really didn't worry too much about my GPA. And I took some time off before pursuing law school, just like Chris did. And that is something I cannot change. So looking back now, I'm at like a 3.8 something. And that's great. I'm happy with it. But if I had been aware of what the impact of my GPA would be on law school potential and law school admissions, I really would have prioritized that more at the time. And so our advice there is like, I wasn't studying for the LSAT while I was undergrad. I was just kind of screwing off with some other stuff and didn't care a ton about school. But if you're in a position where you're trying to study for the LSAT, juggle other things like friends and jobs, whatever else you're up to in undergrad, our advice to you is really take that seriously. Get your GPA as high as it can be. And put things that can be put on hold, like the LSAT, on hold for now.
It was a real shock to me as a non-trad, even opening that GPA box when LSAT compiled this report of everything I'd ever done. I honestly didn't even know what was going to be in there. They managed to pull a dual credit class from when I was 16, a block I went through a community college that drug my GPA down 0.25. points, which was very significant. And so for you as a KJD, there's nobody who could be more familiar with your GPA, your agency to affect that GPA. And I know it sucks to hear that law school is always going to be there and that the LSAT's always going to be there, but it is. Your GPA is not in your ability to change it. And so if we look at kind of how you're feeling as a KJD from when you were 5 years old, you're on this like factory assembly line of education, year to year to year to year, never stopping, always moving up to the next level for a lot of these students. And so it's understandable that's the mindset you're in coming to the end of your undergraduate journey. You want that next step in that factory assembly line. And boy, law school would be lovely if that is the thing we could walk right into. But there's kind of an arbitrary time restriction you're putting on that. And so what you need to ask yourself is, will following that lockstep plan give me the best results in the law school I eventually go to? Are you losing things because you're rushing it? And I think there's also just a lot of life experience that you could get that is going to change the way you even look at this process at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just from the way I viewed going to more school right out of undergrad, I wanted to do it at the time. And honestly, I was just kind of lazy is why I didn't go through with it right away. But the amount that I have learned just about life and honestly, how much I've learned I don't yet know has been extremely helpful for me realizing the weight of a decision like going to law school. Even just something as small as, or not really small, something I worked for 22 years. But when I got my own full-time job and started receiving my own paychecks, like money meant something different to me when it wasn't just a part-time job. It was like, this is my paycheck. This is my salary. I now know what a low salary is versus a high salary. And I'm on the low end. And like that weighs more when I actually start receiving my own paychecks. And it really shaped like, I mean, it shapes all of those things, like where I can live, what activities I can do. Should I go to school and take on debt if this is the kind of home I can afford to rent right now? What do you think other benefits can come from waiting and taking those few years or more years?
I couldn't agree more. And I'm always in the camp that more experience, more perspective, more skills are never going to hurt you, not only just in your application process, but also just in your ability to be a student and later a lawyer. Looking at trying to walk into a job that is JD required, straight out of KJD, you're going to have to communicate to them that you have relatable experience, that you will be able to complete tasks, that you've been supervised, receive feedback, and put it into practice. You can give yourself time to do those things, and I think you'll be better for it. And I say this all throughout my life. I think I get to every stage of my life, and I'm like, okay, I finally understand what it means to be an adult. When I was 18, I was like, I'm an adult now. I get it. High school's in the rear view. Surely I've got things figured out. Now, turning 32 in a month, I don't know if I'll ever be an adult. I don't know when you feel like you've got it figured out. And so give yourself time to figure out as much as you can about yourself, about the process before jumping into law school admission. So for KJDs, affect your GPA as long as you can. And then understand that experience and perspective can kind of provide some change to that arbitrary timeline you might be backing yourself into a corner with. But for our non-traditional students out there who are coming to LSAT study from a different background, maybe taking a break, whether that's a couple years, whether that's 20 years, Beth and I believe there are some really unique benefits and mindsets that you can apply to your LSAT study to provide you a significant advantage, advantages that Beth and I use looking at this as an older student. Beth, how would you talk to these non-trads about benefits they have on the LSAT?
I think one of the top benefits from being, you know, one of those non-traditional students is doing other things while you're studying for the LSAT. I think it is a total recipe for burnout if you're doing 6 to 8 to 10 hours a day of LSAT studying. That will be sustainable for like a week and you'll hit a wall and you'll be like, I hate this test. We want you to give the LSAT your best hour of the day or your best hour and a half or 2 hours. And I really do think that is totally the sweet spot. And if you can do that 7 days a week, great, do it. I personally did it 5 days a week. I did 1 or 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, and it worked great for me because I was able to step up to the plate and study LSAT when I was able to give my time and attention to it. And then when I was done, I closed the laptop and I was thinking about other things and I was doing my job and I didn't have time to sit there and really like beat myself up about a low score or a disappointing question that I got wrong or really just to, yeah, that feeling of like, I'm just not doing enough right now. I think you doing 1 hour a day is absolutely doing enough. It is the sweet spot. And that, and the solidifying of the LSAT studying that comes when you're not actually doing LSAT, that you give yourself time to process. One of the things I tell students very often, both on the ask button and in classes, if there's something that's just not clicking, I tell people all the time, walk away from that question, come back to it in a week. You don't have to solve it right now. I understand that we're all like very type A people. We want to solve it. We believe it's solvable. But sometimes when you walk away from a problem, you can come back a week later and be like, oh, wow, I totally did not see how that LR question had a very clear right answer. And I just had a mental block to it. So I think taking that time away from the LSAT is extremely important. And that's why I think one of the best ways you can do that is give yourself time to live your life work a job, whether that's full-time or part-time, whatever works for you. Invest in relationships, friendships, do other things. We don't want you full-time studying for the LSAT.
I certainly would have burnt out doing that. And I love that you talked about the best hour concept. And I think that's something that makes this achievable for non-traditional students. And for me, I did this while working full-time. So sometimes my best hour was lunch hour in the middle of the day. I had that at my office job. I would take it and use that to study. Sometimes that best hour was 30 minutes here, 30 minutes there. And sometimes I just had to be honest with myself and say, I really don't have a best hour today. If I studied, I wouldn't get a lot out of it. And so I might be better tomorrow if I take a break. When you remove the constraints of a hard and fast timeline that you can't change, you have the freedom to adjust to yourself and what you need as a student when it comes to studying the LSAT. And so that means looking at things like working while you're studying as a choice, not just a necessity to survive, can provide a significant benefit. You're getting more experiences, you're building a resume, you're learning how to balance tasks, because that's what you'll have to do in law school as well. When you're a law student, you could have classes and clinicals and internships and other things you're doing to build experiences. It's never going to feel like you could just devote 8 hours of pure focus a day on studying for a particular class. Practicing those skills now is good. But I think non-traditional students and how they approach their LSAT study are going to arrive to their study and their law school program with a lot of those skills well in hand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a fun way to do it, too, that can help you with the LSAT potentially. And this is not sufficient to guarantee that you will do well on the LSAT if you do this. But I always love to plug with people, pick up a book for fun. Read. Things that aren't just the LSAT. I think in this LSAT study time, it can be sort of like a pressure cooker, or we pick up a test date and we're really set on it, even if we're not set or not signed up yet. It's like, all right, fine, I won't sign up for June, but I really want to take June and I'm going to pressure myself for that. Do your best to let that go. And maybe not just reading, but I do think a great thing to do to supplement like your mind while you're studying for something important is read. And by that, I don't mean that you have to read books like you're reading and or like you read in undergrad, and that everything has to be nonfiction and heady and you always have to be learning. Crack some books for fun. Try something new. Try a new genre. Pick up something old like The Lord of the Rings. Got a couple of Lord of the Rings heads here among our other demon teachers as well. Super fun books all around. And if something is not your forte, pick up something else. I think it's a great way to increase your vocabulary as well. The LSAT is all about understanding words and mastering the English language. And a great way to do that is becoming a master of reading. And I don't care what you read. I'd love to hear about it sometime, but I don't care what you like.
That's such a good point, Beth. And it's actually backed up by brain science. So my background is in education and current career. Our brains learn best when they're curious and have a high desire to learn, which means burnout is the exact opposite of those feelings. Our brain learns worse when it really doesn't want to spend time learning, which makes sense if you think about it. But ways that you can give yourself an escape from the LSAT are all the things Beth just talked about. Find a hobby, find a book, get a job that you're doing alongside your study to have some avenue in your brain that's not just focused on the craziness of law school admissions. And I think when I look at my experience being a non-traditional student, I can't tell you it was always easy and I always avoided burnout and that I managed things perfectly and hit one magical hour every day and I walked on clouds to my proctored test. Not the case. It's tough, but things worth doing are tough. And I think more than any other population, non-traditional students are confronted every day with the question of, I just worked 8 hours. I'm tired. I'm home. I put the kids to bed. I just made dinner. Do I want to go to law school so badly that I'm going to crack open the book and study? And that's a question that not many other populations are forced to ask themselves to that same degree. And so that for me served as like a check every single day when I started study, like, yes, I do want this. I want it badly enough to set all the stuff aside and commit my 1 hour.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And just on that, and like a shout out to people who come to my classes that I see that are in there and they're like, hey, happy to see you. I've got 30 minutes on my lunch break today. I am always so confident that those people are going to do well, or people that I know have children and they're like, yeah, do you mind if my kid is in the Zoom? And I'm like, of course not. I want to see your kid. Thanks for letting them say hi. And I just know that those people really want this, and that's a great position to be in. And I think it'll serve you really, really well in your future career.
And that kind of serves as just like a jumping off point. We want non-traditional students to feel like, yes, there is hope for you. You're not an outlier because you're starting this at 30, 40, 50, 60, wherever you come from. If you've decided that you want the JD badly enough that you want to commit and study for it, you can do this. And I know Beth and I aren't the all-encompassing example of all non-traditional students, but it's something that we did. We studied while working and we made it happen for us. And so we want to tell you that as a non-traditional student, this is achievable for you. And it's achievable in the ways that we're talking about here, in fitting this process to fit your life and the way you can make this happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the important things to note about that, if you look up the average age of a law student, it's not 22. And that, I think a lot of times maybe people, and I have felt this pressure for myself before, a lot of times it feels like, oh, other people are going to be ahead of me. They just already had that. They went for it. They knew what they wanted. But I am fully confident, and I think Chris would agree too, we are confident you can do it, and you have what it takes if you go through with it. If you jump through the hoops required to get to law school, we trust you with yourselves. Go for it. And then, like, we also trust you with yourselves to decide to not practice law if you decide it's not for you or something in the future. But I do think that's important. Like, this is a graduate school. It's a career path that's not just going to college. It's not just made up of people who have just graduated fresh out of undergrad. It's not an opportunity to go have a college experience. I hope, and I do hear about people building community within law school, and that's obviously a hope of mine too when I go next year, but not quite in the same way of like, great, I get another bubble for a few years of like living in a little utopia like undergrad. So with that too, like just encouraging students who are either around our age or older than us, or maybe even still a little bit younger, but a couple years out, do not put that timeline on yourself. Even just looking up different law schools too, you'll find that some law schools cater to, you know, even older students or part-time programs for people who are working full-time or taking care of a family still.
Talking about the bubble of undergraduate experience is incredible, I think, for us to kind of share about our experience a little bit, Beth, and the way that we've changed between that point and now. Talk to me about some of your bubble popping experiences. You're Beth, fresh graduate. What happened to kind of make you get a wake up call in the real world?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, so much, right? I'm only 5 years out of undergrad. You're going to be like, why didn't you tell me this? But I turned 27 today.
I'm old.
So, so today is I'm 27. So I'm only 5 years out. It's not very long. But in that 5 years, I've had 3 different full-time jobs. And even that has been wildly illuminating to me of like, I did not know what I wanted to do, because after a year of my first job, I was like, I got to get out of here. After a year of my second job, I was like, I got to get out of here. Thankfully, I'm at one now that I've been at for a few years, and that has worked out a lot better and allowed me to pursue law school. But when I graduated and started working, I was just a totally different person than I am now. It just felt like everything was so frantic of like even learning how to work and hold a job. I think part of the reason that I wanted to leave my first job after just a year wasn't actually because of the nature of the job. It was because working for 8 hours a day was a new experience. And it's hard to work 8 hours a day. I don't think it's a good way that our society operates. But it felt so much like my boss was personally victimizing me for that, even though it was just a very normal ask. And just learning how I worked and how I could work a job and learning through the flow for a couple of years of like, all right, this is how you juggle your tasks. This is how I personally keep organized when it's not just going to school and working part-time while I'm in school. And this is how I like learn to interact with somebody who's a manager and things like that. I just feel like a wildly different person, both in my personal life and at work. And then as far as like what has changed of when I exited undergrad to now too, when I left undergrad, I had one of those like social justice warrior degrees. Totally loved my studies, but I thought that I could one day go to law school and like change the whole structure of our country. It has taken, and I wouldn't have admitted that at the time, but I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to end it. I'm going to end all the isms. And the law is how I'm going to do it. And working different jobs in social work and government for me in my experience has taught me that's not how it works. And really the impact that I will want to make is going to be an interpersonal one. And that has largely changed the trajectory of like, do I want this? I've had to ask that question many times. What about you? How do you feel like you have changed and how your experience has shaped why you even want to go to law school?
Well, first, I want everyone to bookmark this podcast. And when Judge Noble is at her Supreme Court confirmation, I want you to pull this back up so they can see that actually Beth really is changing the world. She can end isms now. She has ability. Yes, I certainly changed a lot between then and now. For me, it's a bit longer. So I did some research for anyone who's younger. Top songs on the charts the year I graduated undergrad were Thrift Shop and Blurred Lines, if you've heard any of those classic bangers, which seem a little old now. And I, as a student in undergrad, humanities degree, didn't really want to be a teacher. And so I sensed the bubble around me. And I was like, oh no, as soon as I get out of here, this guy's going to pop. And that's going to be a horrible experience. So I went to school, graduate school once already, just to try to preserve that bubble. So I ended up getting a degree in higher education. I had an impossible time, like Beth was describing, telling the difference between, is this a career field I hate and a huge mistake in my life? Or did the bubble pop and I just didn't notice and now I'm working all the time and I'm not used to that and I hate it? I stuck with it, thankfully, because the answer for me was the latter. I just was adjusting to working for the first time and not liking it. And it was tough being evaluated, having other people accountable to you, being accountable to something else in a larger organization, job, or career field. Those were signature developing moments for me as an individual that are going to make me a better student in law school, but also for my LSAT prep. I learned that a lot of times we have to do stuff that we don't want to do. And adulthood forced me to do way more of that than undergrad ever did. And learning how to persevere through those experiences, just doing the stuff you don't want to, because you know it's going to be better for you at the end of the day, is not something I could have done well at 21 or 22.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I couldn't agree more. And as far as like doing things you don't want to do, I already said I slacked off a bit in undergrad. When there was an assignment I didn't like, it would just be a paper that I half-assed 12 hours before it was due. But like that doesn't fly at your job. You do that enough and you're going to get fired, which has not happened to me. But I had to learn, oh, I do have to do the things I don't want to do. And that's how work works.
Yeah. And I think just those experiences of developing, changing, not just in kind of that grit and gumption factor. I'm really standing on boomer corner here, sounding like my dad. But those processes do develop a lot of those skills in you, being able to persevere through those things. And I think it changed this perception I had about work in general, that I believed that thing that when I find a job I love, I will never work a day in my life. And the rest of my life will be like out of a songbook. And then I'll retire with the white picket fence and the dog on my lap and just look back on a life feeling satisfied. I think any career you're going to do, there's going to be things in it that you don't like. The experience of a non-traditional student allowed me to experience those things and still push through those, because I am very excited to practice law and to be a lawyer one day. Would I tell you it's going to be a honeymoon career that I'm going to love every minute of every day and never have a work day that I hate and makes me question that? Absolutely not. But now I have the context to expect that. I think that's what I'm going to walk into. So when I encounter that in law school, at an internship, at a summer position, something, that won't shock me. And I'll be ready to still know that I want to be a lawyer. I want to do this, even though that seems a little tough.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that sort of popped in the bubble for me as related to that idea and what you're talking about, I think this is related, just that debt has a lot to do with how you could potentially be tied to a career if you did end up hating it. If you did end up saying, you know what, I did this, I worked hard, I tried it, and I don't want to do it anymore. I want to go back to what I was doing before, or I want to pursue a different career. And I think that's a totally valid decision to make. And it's one that honestly, what I've been able to do and like scholarships that I've already received have already taken the pressure off for like, if I one day decide that I value some of my time a little bit more than my life as an attorney is allowing me to have, I will be okay to walk away from it. And that's incredibly freeing. But I think on that too, part of what bubble popped for me after I graduated undergrad, and just to acknowledge this first, this is coming from an incredibly privileged standpoint. So I do want to acknowledge that. And this is not going to be everybody's experience, nor do I think it is. I didn't realize what the weight of debt was, you know, before I graduated. I was very privileged that my parents paid for part of my undergrad, but I did graduate with like $30,000 in debt. I didn't know what debt meant until that amount started coming from my paychecks. And after like a couple years of making those payments, plus rent, plus utilities, you know, all of those bills that I just had the privilege of not knowing about yet, really made a difference and would have made just a life. It would have been utterly like life shattering if I had decided to go to law school, take on $150,000 worth of debt, and then graduate with that plus my undergrad debt at the time. So I think I said that in a bit of a jumbled way, but just the weight of what money actually means, I didn't know until I graduated from undergrad. Fortunately for me, probably, but it's huge. And I really do think that taking that time to study for the LSAT, get the best score you can, will open doors that you never would have imagined. And I mean, for me, it has opened incredible doors of just, I will get to go to law school.
I share a lot of that experience, Beth, and it's hard to describe like the actual impact and weight that debt feels like, because when we're in undergraduate school and graduate school, it delays payments on those things. So it's kind of like being at a bar and just like racking up things on your tab. And then you look at it 6 years later and you're like, what is this? And I remember actually having a moment like that. I graduated, I started a job, and I got an email. I don't actually know how they got my current email, but they're snakes. That's how. And they sent me like, hey, your debt service starts at this month, which was like 6 months after I graduated. And I was like, what is this? And I clicked it. And it was a dollar amount I could not have imagined. I like literally called my mom and I was like, Mom, what is this thing? And she's like, that's your undergrad. You have to pay it now. And I had no idea what that meant. And that amount that shocked me, that I had to sit with and figure out what to do with, was a quarter of what paying full freight at many of these law schools would be. And we have to have just a real, you know, conversation about what paying that debt looks like. And so as a non-traditional student, now I have the capacity to understand what that means and the life experience that informs that, you know, so I can weigh the cost of what I'm taking out, what it would take me to pay back. So I would say if that's something you're still exploring, use calculators online, play with salary numbers, play with tuition numbers, look at aid amounts you could expect from schools. Find a story that works for you. And when at LSAT Demon, we say don't pay for law school, that's the heart of what we're talking about, is that you can find opportunities to get that JD and not have to look at an amount of debt you're going to pay off the rest of your life.
Yeah. And part of the reason for that is also because A JD doesn't guarantee that you will get a job or that you will get a job practicing in the area that you want to practice. Even getting a JD doesn't guarantee that you will pass the bar maybe the first time. I think if you do well on the LSAT, it kind of predicts. And if you do well in law school, it predicts that if you work hard, you can do that as well. But if you struggle through those things, you pay full freight, and then you're trying to take the bar and squeak through, I just think that's a lot weightier. And then just that you're not guaranteed to make any sort of average salary or big law salary. None of that is actually guaranteed in any sort of paperwork from a law school when you actually become a Juris Doctor. So for me, and Chris and I have different interests in the law, which I think is cool. And a lot of us have, you know, different reasons we want to pursue law and different careers we want to pursue. But I am one of the people who wants to do public interest work. And I already mentioned this a little bit, but that has, you know, shaped into like, I want to do public interest, maybe policy, maybe government, maybe public defense. And I've always been a little bit aware of like, those are not going to be the high dollar jobs. And so a couple of years ago, when I was trying to apply to law schools with a low LSAT score, I would have racked up debt that I never would have been able to pay off. So really, with this and with taking an extra year and a half for me, it has wildly changed the options of now getting to decide between like good schools with full ride offers that will allow me to practice in the area that I hope to practice in. And I won't have to do something like go, okay, I'll have to practice in this area of law that I'm not interested in for X amount of time in order to pay off my debt. And then I can do what I really want to do.
Yeah. And that's when we look at the legal field in general, having an idea of what work you think you want to do, one, please have that figured out before you look at undertaking any loans for law school, right? Being a lawyer sounds great. Try to link that up with an application to that degree so you can get an idea of these things that Beth is talking about. And when we look at the field of law in general, doing that research isn't always easy. Very, very quickly, we can pull average salary amounts for lawyer from the school in the state. But average isn't really the best indicator to actually see the real picture of what lawyers make. You have kind of a bimodal two-part distribution to lawyer salaries. You have people who want to work in public interest and make the world a good place. And then you have everyone else. And those people usually work in private law, big law, representing clients in firms of varying sizes. And your large salaries are coming from very large firms that are paying you to do really menial, difficult, unfun, sometimes morally ambiguous work. But it pays really well. The average takes those two groups and lands in the middle. The trick is you need to be hyper aware with the school you're looking at seeing what are the placement rates in those two salary fields. Is it realistic for me to expect a job that's going to pay me $215,000 graduating from this school? Or is it just a very small handful of people who end up being able to do that? And additionally, a lot of students kind of have this idea that, no, I don't want to do big law work because it's horrible and I don't want to have that kind of grind in my life, but I'll do it for X number of years and then I'll pay off my salary. You have to be aware that, one, that's assuming that we could get a big law job, first of all, which isn't guaranteed. The market could turn. You just might not have success at interviews. They might not be hiring as many people that year. You also need to understand that, sure, that firm is going to pay you $215,000 out the gate, but a lot of those jobs are going to be located in cities like Chicago, New York, Los Angeles. Just staying alive in those cities is expensive. Not even thinking about the debt service payments that could be $2,000, $3,000. $4,000 you're tacking on. And so with our experience in the working world, paying some of the debt, seeing how money works and watching it leave at the end of every month, different bills, we have the ability now to weigh those things and see, is this a value proposition for me? And that's really a way just to give us agency. We can look at what schools and what opportunity are going to give us the most ability to decide what we want to do. If you take $350,000 worth of debt, the only decision you can really make is something that's going to allow you to pay off that debt, whether you enjoy it or not.
Yeah, I really love that idea that you just honed in on, that it gives you your agency back. And I think that's sort of the idea that we were getting at with like planning, doing this podcast together, of we want you to have the freedom to decide what to do with your own life. And part of that is going to be tied up with what kind of work you want to do, how much debt you have or are willing to take on. And maybe that still will be some, by the way, you know, that's okay if it's some, if you decide that that's the right choice for you. But having that agency also to potentially walk away from practicing law in the future if you decide it's not for you. We already touched on that a little bit, but I find that extremely freeing, mostly because I also want you to have that same agency to decide what brings your life value. And my answer is going to be very different from Chris's. It's probably going to be very different from many of our listeners too. But we are individuals who have different values. And I want you to have the choice with what to do with your time. So take your time in undergrad. Take your time studying for the LSAT. Do things that bring you value, joy, happiness. Invest in relationships, family, friendships while you have time to, and find out like who brings out the best in you. Read cool books, watch cool movies. Just like find out what your hobbies are so that you can take your life back a little bit and not be indebted to work or to debt from the government or private loans, even worse.
After you get your JD, you're going to have like 50 to 60 years to give as much productive labor as you can to this country. You can take 6 months a year, a couple years to figure out if it's the right trip for you, and do that in a way, like Beth says, it's going to maximize your agency in this process.
Yeah, I think that's about it for me, Chris. Is there anything else that you would share today?
If you liked Beth and I chatting in this podcast, send ideas into us. You can email daily@lsatdema.com. If you want to ask us questions, have ideas for a topic, or want to share any really, really happy LSAT admissions news that you have. And as always, you can find us on lsatdema.com, teaching classes, on the Ask button, working with students every day. But Beth and I just want to thank you for listening.